I thought you were dead.
Sun out of your eyes and be yourselves.
Heard you were dead.
She's dead, wrapped in plastic.
That man's dead back then.
It was worse than dead. Must be dead. Is this a dead man, Duck?
Oh, God! Oh, Jesus Christ!
Get your head doing a 900, brah. They think you spin right around, brah.
I'll just say this. Insurance is important, everyone.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that. It's not a fun
absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely.
Insurance.
It's a form of oppression. You're going to be so mad for the next, I don't know. Well, how long do you think you're going to live? Another 55 years? You're going to be mad that entire time about this.
Oh, my knee that one time.
Yeah.
And they look at you, I feel like they talk to you differently when you don't have insurance. They're like, oh, this is, it's you.
It's charity.
No, they feel bad. They like hate. They feel like they don't like me.
They look down on you?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, oh, you don't have insurance.
Wow.
It's
brutal.
Well, man.
That's we're starting off this episode with really catching up with Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. Blew my shit out.
We're doing How is Mike's month? Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to Roast Mortem. It's the only podcast where you've been missing Mike.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I got a lot of fan mail. So people telling me to come back to the show.
We've all been missing you. Was it
we've
was
been
it
missing
written
you,
by the
bud.
Three of us?
What was that?
Was the fan mail written by the three of us?
No, it was various artists.
Yeah. Snoop Dogg loves our show.
My scab keeps coming off like as I'm talking, and it's kind of disgusting. I'm sorry, Tom.
Same, is it the same wound as the knee injury or different?
So like when my knee gave out, I'm like hauling ass.
Wait, back up for the listeners.
Yeah. What were you doing?
Oh, right. And if you need to tap out, like... I'm not trying to exploit your terrible
this
situation.
This isn't trauma,
but
this is interesting.
I got another funny thing that happened after I got injured. It was like kind of like a Seinfeld moment. It was, all right.
So whatever, whatever you want to
start the first injury.
I went to Atlanta to go like film skateboarding with my friends. And so we had just gotten to Atlanta. We had checked into the hotel and we're like, all right, we're looking for spots now because it's like still daylight out and it's like 80 degrees there like all the time. It's fucking amazing. So New York fucking sucks.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, Reggie, this is your spot. It's like, it's a wall ride over this grass gap thing. So you can like wally it. And anyone like wally is like when you just jam your board into the wall and you like just somehow come off of it. You like you can kind of like ollie off a wall. So I was trying to go into this parking lot and I was scared because I'd never done something so like that before, like that big. And I came down my knee all weird and it felt like my knee like disappeared. That like makes any sense.
Oh, okay.
And then it came back when I hit the ground because I was like, "Oh fuck!" And like my knee like gave out, so like I slammed to my shoulder. But like I felt like my whole shit was like bleeding and shit. I didn't realize until like later on because I was so focused on my knee.
Yeah,
I was like worried that like I snapped my knee or something like that.
Mike, when you say you felt like your knee disappeared, did your kneecap actually disappear?
No, it's back now.
Oh, okay. It came back.
It went for like a boomerang. It like it's called like a pivotal. On the MRI, it has a word for it.
We're not a medical show.
A pivotal like knee injury or whatever it is when your knee and your joints like twist at the same time or something
like
that.
Bent the wrong way.
Yeah, it's all crisscross or something like that, and it
crisscross applesauce.
Yeah, right, so it's like it went to the right. When I was going left.
Oh. And this is your left knee. Yeah.
It's like when you have a bendy.
It's not good.
When you have a bendy straw and you bend it too much and it just starts to not
sideways. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it turns into a hospital bill. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was not very, very painful. It's pretty painful.
And this was like day one of your trip, basically.
No, day two of skating. Yeah, basically.
Right. And you went on like a 10-day skating adventure.
Yeah. Basically, I had to just hang out and just get drunk.
You got shafted, man.
Yeah, I got, you know, as they say, you got to pay to play, as they...
Yeah,
that's true.
Mike, do you think you're going to make a career change to Heelys now?
Probably just going to the meta and dropping out.
Oh, just going to meta? Just jacking in?
Jacking in and jacking off. I mean, fuck, man. Life hurts.
Yeah.
Don't want out sage advice here, Mike.
Yeah, so, you know, feel free at any point. During the next few episodes, you're with us to tell us these tales because I like tales of travel.
Oh, so I fucked up my knee, and I'm hammered now because we were like, they felt like my boys want me margaritas and shit. So we're like, we're going back to the hotel, and we're like, where the fuck are we? And we're back at the same fucking spot where I fucking fucked up my fucking knee.
Bringing you back to the scene of the crime.
Like, oh, shit, my bad, yo, give me PTSD. I'm like, yeah.
Anyway, you're just limping around with your kneecap facing the other way?
Yeah, I know, it was so bad. It was, I mean, I thought it was just my meniscus, but it's my ACL and my meniscus, so.
Jesus. Damn. Christmas.
All right, Mike, well, one last thing. You said you're in the South. You went to the Waffle Houses a lot.
Yes, I went to one pretty much every day.
What was your order? Ooh. What was your favorite order at Waffle House?
Chocolate chip waffle, hash browns, bacon, and chocolate milk.
Oh, nice. Double chocolate.
And I got eggs a couple times. They're pretty good. Eggs aren't bad.
They do a nice running egg there.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's fucking good delicious. Grease spot. Yeah,
Waffle bacon House was... It gets a lot of shit talk from us Northerners, but it's great.
I think it's fantastic.
Fucking sold out.
24 nice, hours a day, right? Most of them are 24
hours
a day.
Yeah, 24 hours, yeah. Everyone's
it's
super
basically
nice
IHOP, though, right?
IHOP.
Yeah, I was like IHOP without the pancakes.
It's greasy.
Nah, I just said that to piss off the Southern listeners.
Yeah. You piss me off.
Yeah.
God damn it. All right, Mike, we will come back to more of your tales.
Tales
from the road.
Tell me how your week was.
Well, speaking of torn ACLs, it must be going around. Because Lizzie and I, our dog, might have a partially torn ACL.
Uh-oh.
From all that athleting around the couch?
From all that, those jumps up and down on the couch, and then walking outside, take a big shit, and walking back in. He's an old
was
dog.
Your dog trying to make Harry. A... Was your dog trying to do a Wally or whatever, Wallarang or whatever Mike was trying to
no,
do?
Wallaluigi? He was dropping in on the half pipe run. And,
Harry was getting gnarly.
His leg kind of went out. Yeah.
Did it wrong. Danny weighed it,
yeah.
So it must be going around. Hopefully, just put on some rest.
You guys don't catch it. Yeah, I'm spreading it.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I'm going to stop using my legs.
ACL today. 18.
You got anything else, Connor?
No, nothing more exciting than Mike's adventures. So.
Yeah, it's good. Travis, tell me. I know you've been sporting.
Yeah, let me tell you about my extreme sport. It's called floating.
Oh, yeah.
I am now a pro... Travis Lee Pro Floater.
Ooh.
Video game's coming out next month.
That's pretty dope, Travis.
You basically just have to hit nothing because you don't have to do anything. Just watch a screensaver of me floating around in the tub. It was so good. I want to go all the time now. I felt so rested. Because you can float so well, you can like crack your back. You know, like you're just like, oh.
Oh, wow.
So
on water.
You were moving around a lot in the water while floating?
I mean... At first, it was like kind of like a little novel, but then I was like, I'm going to do some stretches, and I just like floated in the darkness.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You touch the walls at all?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big guy, so the tub was, if I positioned myself right, I could like extend everything.
Okay.
And then just like starfish out, but then like I'd like tap the wall and be like, oh, that's weird.
Nice.
So yeah, that's I did good. That. I was a floater. I became my hero, the floaters I make every day.
Congrats on that too.
You're an American hero, Travis.
I've also been playing the Elder Ring, the new Dark Souls game. And let me tell you, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just running around killing ugly people. My new favorite thing in the game is lighting giant crabs on fire.
Ooh.
With my fire magic.
All right.
Love a good crab enemy.
Yeah.
What are video games?
I don't know.
Stimulants.
Yeah.
Complex puzzles.
Tom, what are they?
Tom, did you light any crabs on fire this week?
It's a good question. It's well phrased. I haven't been going out, you know, post-surgery and, you know, just COVID crap, everything. Like, I don't want to go out and wear a mask at a bar and shit. Like, I'd rather just be home. You know, I'm back on this. I am drinking again pretty frequently, which is fine because now I understand everything about programming. I'm actually Bill Gates' best friend. So it's cool. But I went out to a place in Huntington and it's a nice bar. I don't want to name it. I do recommend the venue, but they were doing some kind of art show there. And this is a night where I realized I hate art. There was a man there who was painting celebrity portraits,
mm-hmm.
and they were good for eighth graders. It was the worst art. maybe not the worst.
Was it like the classic like big head caricatures of celebrities? Yeah. Like that you see like guys on like touristy spots doing?
No. I had that done in the... It was worse because it looked traced. And,
oh.
God. There was no character. Like, you know, all the character was the color, yeah. which I hate in art. I think it's... I think art is bad in general. But I had a fun time there. Because there was a jazz band playing, and whenever there's jazz band, you know,
you have a good time.
You jazz get horny,
yeah.
Yeah. You get horny, that's right? Yeah, and you, but
so you get saxy, you get horny. Do you get horny or do you get saxy?
I get horny. There was no sax there. I don't like the saxophone that much.
What? God, the saxophone?
Who does?
I like the saxophone. It's grown on me as I become an adult.
I get a little sax once in a while, like a little hint of it.
This was a three-piece.
The main attraction.
Yeah.
This was a three-piece jazz band doing some, you know, kind of boppy.
What are the three pieces?
Drums, bass, drums, and guitar.
Okay.
So this happens to me all the time. I'm going to wrap this up quickly, but I'm out with Gab, and I see this guy. It's probably about 55, 60, and he's like kind of eyeing me in the bar. And I'm like, I know as soon as Gab goes to the bathroom, this guy's going to talk to me.
Mm.
Let alone this guy sure does talk to me. And I've noticed something about like these Huntington 60-year-old men. When they're conservative, they love to tell you within the first 5 minutes. Yeah. And they like to shock you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care. So what I've done, I started doing and figured out with this guy, is that just agree with everything he says.
And they'll go away?
And then one-up him.
Oh.
So when he goes, you know, he starts making conversation. Yeah, nice jazz band. You know, I'm divorced, all this stuff. You know, a lot of people your age don't like this around here, but I'm conservative. And I go, yeah, me too. I don't fucking care. Like, yeah. I don't want to talk about this. And he's, you know, it's just like, oh, it's crazy. Everyone's so sensitive.
Oh.
You know, Nancy Pelosi. And then you got to one up it. Whenever they say Nancy Pelosi, you say, do you want to kill her? Do you want to kill her? You and me right now?
I got guns.
I have her address.
Yeah.
So we can kill her.
Do you think he scoped you out because he was like, oh, here's a little snowflake I can fuck with?
Yeah, exactly. You see a lot of that on Long Island.
Yeah.
And I don't care. Like, I was in a place, I was in this place, and you're surrounded by the other people. They're at least more entertaining when they come up and they go, hey, I'm a conservative. Because the other people, they're still wearing masks. Like, they're inside taking down their mask, eating bits of vegan macaroni around the mask. And it's just like, I'd rather talk to this fucking idiot than those bookmarks.
Yeah.
You know, you can't win with that generation. It's unfortunate.
We're doomed.
Yeah, they're leading the country. Anyway, Mike, I'm real sorry about your knee. Connor, sorry about
Harry's
dog's knee.
Yeah.
Travis, I'm sorry.
For you.
Dude, I'm a floater. I'm a floater, bro. I'm a floater gamer, bro. Follow me on Twitch. I'm just going to be floating.
Are you going to do a Twitch stream?
I want to do a Twitch stream of me just in the float tank.
That'll be cool.
I want to just censor my nuts.
Do you need to? You just throw a little pudding on there.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah,
I could stick one of those like Ronald McDonald red noses on there, right?
Get away with a lot.
Yep. Just turn the lights off.
You're a charity now. Put that nose there.
So wait, Tom, who is on the block of choppers as he walks away?
Oh, sorry, no, I was just checking something, making sure we're rolling all good. Yeah, thank you for asking. Guys, we have a fun one tonight.
Oh, yeah.
We have one of my favorite actors. I only do actors from now on. And actresses.
That's
and,
right.
The entertainers, where history is made. Not this weird history you guys talk about.
Yeah.
We're talking about George C. Scott.
Oh.
Strong name.
Oh, my favorite actor.
We were talking about before. Just such a strong name.
Me and Mike were smoking a pipe before, talking about the works of George C. Scott.
Oh, yeah. This is very intriguing.
I was going to say, does the C stand for Cena?
Semen?
It's actually Cena. A great question.
George Cena.
No, I wrote it down somewhere. I forget where it was. But I have it in here.
Something
I will say
like Cunningham.
No, actually, wait, did I forget to write the C down?
I think it stands for John Cena. The John is silent.
It's
much like the man himself.
Yeah, I forgot to write it down. Someone could pull that up. That's really stupid of me. Okay, George C. Scott is one of the finest actors that the American cinema and stage have ever seen. He was quite busy on the American stage doing all kinds of Shakespeare performances, and then later best known for roles in Dr. Strangelove, and in The Changeling, and in Patton. Movies that are all fantastic. I highly recommend watching many of his films. They're not all winners. You can't have it that way, but...
No actor shoots 100%.
Yeah, this guy could sell it. You know, he had this thing, radiant, and scary.
I think even if you're not a film buff, I feel like the majority of people, if they have seen that one scene from Patton, like, it's ingrained in our consciences. You
What's
know?
His
like,
name again?
Everyone's yeah. seen that. Somebody's doing satire of yeah. it or something like, either, you know, the general in front of a big American flag.
Yeah.
You know?
It's Campbell.
Campbell, yes. Okay.
He's a part of the Soup Dynasty.
Oh, Soup Boy!
Yeah, big Soup Boy.
There's a lot of women who would have been very happy if he was in the Soup Dynasty. Okay, we're getting into it. Born October 18th, 1927 in Wise, Virginia. Which is a tiny coal mining town. Not a lot of shit to do down there. To Father George Dewey Scott and Mother Helena Agnes Slimp Scott, a.k.a. Honey.
Slimp. Honey Slimp Ooh. Scott.
Slimp.
Oh my God.
Slimp.
Wait, so Dewey was sticking it in the honey?
Yeah, I never even thought about that.
Wow.
Honey Dew, baby.
Honey doing it.
Wow. Strong names, all of them.
Mm-hmm. I like that name, Dewey.
We've covered this a few times. He was a big baby, a 12-pound baby.
Jeez.
Almost killed Honey. And I think this is the third person we've had on the show who immediately after childbirth had to be dumped into cold water, freezing cold water, to live.
To wake him up?
Yeah. Because sometimes babies back then, they would get born and there wasn't the medicine. They were born in the houses. And they would
so just, it was like dump a cold water?
Yeah, throw it in the river. Like, I think Hank Williams was ran into a river and like...
That's sick.
Dunk. Yeah.
I think Tallulah Bankhead, too, is the other one that yeah, got to get dunked.
Why is these? That's crazy. Why are these famous people all like getting dunked? They're all supposed to be on Figure It Out.
All right, there's four of us here. Eventually, we're going to have kids. One of us has to try this.
Yeah.
Dump
yeah.
the kid in water, see if they become famous.
Here's the thing. It has to not be breathing when it comes out.
Mm.
Do it when it's breathing.
Yeah. Bit of a risk.
I think we can minimize the risk of like not becoming a successful entertainer if the second it comes out, you put it on a dunk tank, and then people start throwing shit at it.
Yeah.
And then it's got to fall in to live.
I think that's...
I like that.
You got a right arm? Well, your baby's going to be fine.
Population control.
Yeah.
Now, he's alive. He survived, obviously, after being a giant baby. After a struggle to keep baby food down, George became strong. Check this out. He becomes the second in a Wise County baby contest, which I couldn't find any more information about, but was written about in my reference book. Yeah, it was like, he was the best baby in town, or second best.
Well, you said there's not much to do yeah. in the town, so... Every month, why not have a baby contest?
It's a big ass baby, too. 12 yeah. pounds.
It's huge, man. It's twice what I weighed.
Do you think they did the opposite of like count the jelly beans for him? Like they just gave you a jar and they're like, how many jelly beans do you think this baby weighs? And you had to fill up the jar with jelly beans.
Simpler times.
You got to remember, this is 1929. You know, a jelly bean was it for the week. It would have to be like a pebble, you know?
Dark times in Wise, West Virginia.
Yes.
Thank you, Reagan, for resupplying America with jelly beans.
Yeah.
Really?
Amen.
So lots of mines were shut down when he was born. So luckily, Honey's father was a prominent man in town. He was a judge, and his cousin was a congressman. So they had a little bit of, they had a little more money than the next guy, but still relatively poor. This was a very poor town.
Yeah.
His father, George, was a very hard worker and saw all the shit going on in Wise and said, let's get out of here. Let's go over to Pontiac, Michigan.
Nice.
It would be Wise to leave.
Exactly. So we never see Wise again because Wise is done. Okay. Now, Dad works crazy hours, leaving Honey to raise their son. She nurtured the creative side in him. So he was given a lot of artistic expression in his younger years. Explains the acting.
Mm.
Wait, that's... so did he have any bros or sisses, or did he, like, punch the walls of her vagina as he came out and, like,
ruined it all?
Fuck you.
So he, the exit. He's the first one, and then we're going to get into that. Yes, he has some, but it's there's
okay.
stuff happening that we need to cover first. As a boy, he showed interest in theater, but kept it to himself since his mother kept bugging him to do recitals every time a guest came over. So you can over-nurture this stuff. We know this.
Easy. Yeah.
Spent a lot of time in theaters, getting acquainted with the old cowboy movies, and then later he got into the gangster stuff, Cagney, Bogart movies of the 30s and 40s. 1935, at age 8, they moved to Detroit, where Honey gets peritonitis, can't say this, it's a blood disease, and she dies. Bye, Honey. Very sad.
Damn. Oh, man. Man. I wish somebody gave Honey a blood boy. Mike, if you were around, do you think you'd be Honey's blood boy?
Yeah, sure. She paid me.
You just don't want to give her any torn ACL disease.
Yeah, just no blood from the knee.
You gotta take that risk. That's that risk, Honey.
The mother's brother, Bud, or Honey's brother, and his wife, Sally, they took care of the kid. Because George Sr. was still a very hard worker. Couldn't pull him away from the old factories. He ignored his creative side and became a sports boy. He was a tough kid. He was a good sports boy. Lots of rough and tumble. What got him interested in writing and theater again was when he was hit by a car.
Oh, man.
Very easily could have been killed. But instead, he just got a bum leg like you, Mike. So maybe writing is your next passion. Think about it.
Maybe.
Now, he was a 12-pound baby. Did he grow up to be... like a robust guy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? All right.
Yeah, look at pictures of George C. Scott.
Well, I mean, I know in adult life, but like, was he like a freak kid too?
No, he wasn't a freak kid. He was like, it's like an inch shorter than me. I'm 6'3", and he was gaunt. But he was still a player. You know, he wanted to be out there getting fucked up. He liked fighting a lot.
Oh, sure. All right.
His eyes were like kind of sunken in. Yeah. Looks like.
Dangerous.
You said that he got hit by a car. I mean, the car was probably going, what, like 35 miles per hour, 50 miles per hour max, maybe.
Yeah, but they weighed 4 tons back then.
Yeah, it's true.
Most of them are made out of wood.
Yeah, it's wood panel and like and just cast iron beam. Like,
well, maybe that's why they invented the crumple zone, because you got a big fat jelly bean baby running around with a leather hat on being like, I'm going to score a touchdown, Charlie Brown. And then the crumple zone happened because the car actually crumpled under George C. Scott, even though it was made out of Krupp steel.
Yeah. I believe the crumple zone was invented by Volvo.
Fucking Swedes.
There was a time I was driving home and I almost had an accident while picking up my salted fishes. And thank God it didn't happen. The front of my car accordioned. That's a tangent.
You guys ever been hit by a car?
Nah. I got close.
Wait, Mike.
I've been a few close.
I got hit by a car.
That sounds like you've been hit by a car. Yeah.
Tell me, what did it do for your writing career?
I went to go take a Regents. I was on my way because I failed my Regents the first time in the summer. I had to ride my bike to the high school to take this fucking Regents. And this old dude rode through a stop sign and just fucking clipped me.
Oh!
Like, landed on his hood. And I was like, yo, what the fuck, bro? And he like tacoed my tire and... I was like, oh, I'm all right. I was just trying. It wasn't that bad.
But wait, he didn't give you
just
a blank
my tire.
Check? Huh? Like in the movie? Like in the movie Blank Check, when the kid's bike gets fucked up, you didn't get a blank check?
No. I just got like this like scared like look on his face. I probably should have sued him, but I was in ninth grade, and I was like, I have to go fail this thing again.
Yeah. With priorities of
age. I failed the Regents.
What Regents was it?
Algebra.
Oh, brutal.
I didn't even take that one.
You know why I failed algebra? I can't say this.
Say it.
I was sat in front of this math class, and my teacher had the fattest butt, and I really just did not pay attention at all. I was just there, her ass the whole time.
Every time she was on the chalkboard,
and I was like, that's why I fell behind so bad. I'd be daydreaming, looking at her ass.
This happens in
too hot, too hot of a teacher.
Like people talk about the school system and how fucked up it is and shit. It's just like, well, you ever think about the fact that every single boy in a high school is just endlessly horny? Yeah, and like you're true. Expecting them to just figure to out their career.
On, yeah, to, yeah.
Too close to her just anything. Riding on the chalkboard with her ass just be like, I was be like, whoa, this is crazy.
Dude, when you're like, when you're, like, 14, you're like,
this
16?
Is basically sex.
Yeah, basically. Just jotting down notes but not taking any, like, not paying attention.
All right, what is Mr.
Sorry,
Scott doing?
Yeah. Sorry, no, I want to hear Mike's take. I miss it.
That was a good tangent.
Yeah, no, it was a good tangent.
Criticize the American school system, got it all.
Let's change this, guys.
Got it all out, yeah. All right, so let's talk about high school. And after graduating it, George C. Scott enlisted in the Marines. Now, he gets in 1945. He was hoping to see some action and was scheduled to deploy in Japan. But war ended by September 1945, and he never quite makes it over to the Eastern theater.
Looked at
that speaks to his character, the fact that it's 1945. You know how bad the war in the Pacific is for Marines, and you're like, I want that. Yeah. I want that action.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of pride there. So George was tasked with several desk jobs for the Marines, which is just a nightmare. Some language education for the servicemen and assigning plots in the Arlington National Cemetery.
Well, that's pretty grim.
That's actually the setting for the next Call of Duty. You just have to, every round, you just have to lay out where the graves are going, and then you have to help. You do ESL for some of the other
It's every gamer tag of someone who's played COD from going back to COD 1. Oh, they've just been saving the database.
Jesus.
All right, if you want to play, you got to put a bunch of these in the ground.
We're exposing the cost of war.
Call of Duty after war. Home base. I don't know what the fuck you'd call that.
Peacetime.
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 All right, soap. But our first job is to bury this bloke.
I mean, look, it's. I think to some dudes, it would be better than like being shot at.
That's true. I'd take that over any day over being fucking killed.
I don't know. This seemed pretty bad because he had a lot of work to do at Arlington. Yeah. And he had to deal with a lot of widowed women like all the time.
Well, that's not always a bad thing.
Well, no, because they come in, they're crying. None of these women wanted to bang. None of them were prime. He was not in the Johnny Sins role.
You run into them in town, but hey, what's...
Remember I buried your husband?
Yeah.
Plot D96?
Exactly.
I think that's a connection.
Yeah.
I think we talked about it on Krupp with like the fact that like these ordinances were still exploding like up until like they still are. I mean, there's still bodies coming back from World War II in Korea, so he was probably a little bit busy in 1946.
Yeah, a lot of work to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of scraping, if you would. Sorry, I had a typo here. Mm. Cut this out. During his time in the military, his love for writing was in full throttle. He wrote all kinds of stories and papers and sent them to publishers. Lots of rejections. Of course, this is when Scott starts picking up a drinking habit, which is pretty much a characteristic he will bring with him for the rest of his life. This, coupled with a short temper, led to a lot of fights. George C. Scott loved fighting, and he would just sock anyone.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. He was like, before all the lawyers got involved and stuff.
Just quick punch, solve everything?
Anyone in the nose. Like, it didn't matter. George's nose had been broken 4 times in fights in his life. Once in a mugging. You saw his face, right?
Yeah, he looks like he's like Stonehenge. Not Stonehenge, just Stoneface.
Actually, Stonehenge is, he's pretty close to that.
Yeah, like someone like chills out his eyes. He's got like this big forehead. And
yeah, you'll see. I mean, it's on the Instagram and stuff. We'll have, like the man's nose by the time he's in his 20s is like, it looks like it has been pounded on. Like he looks like a boxer.
His face looks like it's made out of bricks.
I mean, I'd hate him if he punched me in the face for no reason. Just like, because that's what he liked to do, just punch people in the face.
It wasn't like a no reason thing, but miscommunication could happen quickly. Like, he wasn't the kind of guy to start the fight, just like, let's start a fight. But
if
he
someone
was the kind of guy,
him immediately?
Very short fuse.
Oh, okay. Most alcoholics always have their drink of choice. Do we know what George's was?
A lot of vodka.
Vodka guy?
Yeah. Ooh, vodka. Ooh, that or no, that's a little bit communist for me. Maybe this man shouldn't be playing one of our maybe not so greatest generals of all time.
Yeah,
well,
maybe you should have been playing a Ruski.
That's a good point. Actually, he really did hate communists.
Well, why was he drinking the commie juice?
A name like that.
George C. Scott,
in the Marines, you're going to hate communists.
I mean, I'm sure he was drinking other stuff. I don't think there was a limitation.
Right. No, there never is.
Good.
Yeah. He was discharged in 1949, about a year before the Korean conflict.
Coincidence?
No action.
Coincidence?
Yeah, they were waiting for him to go.
He's the one person I feel bad for that served between 46 and 49.
Yeah, the one guy who wants to murder those Tojos.
Get this
one
guy over
who might
there.
Have like had combat like solve a few things in his brain.
Yeah, he may have just been a quiet dude.
Yeah,
sitting at home. I went back to Pontiac, Michigan.
Yeah,
and learned upholstery. That was my life. But no, we got George C. Scott, the great actor. I think it's a good trade off. With his GI Bill, he went to the University of Missouri in Columbia, majoring in journalism. Not too crazy about his new career path, he started thinking about other moves. And then one day he sees a play poster. Auditions, come try out, they say. So he's like, yeah, why not? Go see some babes in skirts. So he memorized the script. Apparently this isn't looked kindly upon in the theater world. You're not supposed to memorize a script. You're supposed to kind of let whoever the directing auditioner or the director who's doing the audition lead you through parts.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that.
No.
But that just seems like the director's like way of just being like, oh yeah, I write the script, even though I didn't even write it, but you have to learn it from me.
Yeah. It is weird. I don't know. Like, what's the harm? Just learn the script.
Yeah. Also, like, I feel like with a lot of plays too, it's like, I don't know, if you're doing like Shakespeare, like classical plays, like you have to get the lines right. Because like,
yeah.
You know,
that's what everyone's there for.
Yeah, you're not doing like Pulp Fiction or like, you know, like
yeah. And Scott was a stickler for that his entire career. He did a lot of Shakespeare stuff. We're about to get into that. He memorized the script. He gets his desired part. Now it's in a a play called The Winslow Boy, and he plays a judge called Sir Robert Morton. This was the path to acting for him. He really liked stage stuff. He never took any classes at all, this guy. Now, if you did some research and just started watching, you would think he was one of the highest trained because of his deliveries. Mm-hmm. His deliveries are just freakishly good. Might I say better than Oliver Reed's? I wouldn't say that, but close. Content. You could maybe go scene for scene.
I don't know if anyone will pass him in your heart.
No, absolutely not. George C. Scott, he holds a place in my heart.
But not a hub above Oliver.
Nope. Not the Oliver hub.
Is he above, who is the other guy you throbbed over that one time?
Oh, Cary Grant?
Cary Grant. Where's Cary Grant?
Here's the thing. Like, I'm not I like Cary Grant, and he is a perfect person. Yeah. But he's not as interesting as Scott or Reed.
Yeah, he's just the handsome man.
He's handsome. He shows up. He does his lines. He's a gentleman. You know, maybe sucked a dick or two, allegedly. We don't know. All good stuff, really. During his university years, he acted in a whole bunch of plays and was noted for many of his acting capabilities as well as his writing. A well-respected writer on campus, having won a few short story competitions by this point, and even teaching a class on English mastery.
Yeah, regular old R.L. Stein.
I don't think I ever read one of those books.
Dude, what? Beast from the East, man. Yeah. Beast from the East.
Yeah, they rubbed me the wrong way.
I love those books.
Yeah.
What's your favorite, Mike?
Can't remember any of them.
What's your favorite cover? As a kid. What's your favorite cover?
I thought they were all dope. That's why I was attracted to them.
Say cheese and did it.
A bit the fucking Scholastic fucking
the book fair?
Yeah.
He
had a part-time job at an all-female college theater program at Stephens College. He fell in love with an Irish lady, Carolyn Hughes, a student slash actress from Stephens College. They married in August of 1951. In December of 1952, Carolyn and Scott had their first child, Helen Victoria. Not long after the baby was born, Scott started an affair with actress Karen Truesdahl, who later became a very well-known playwright.
Oh. Okay, baby pops out, time to go do another thing.
It's draining. That summer was full of 1953's dry humping. You see, Scott couldn't take it anymore with Truesdell, we're not married, we can't do fucking. So Scott's like, look, man, that wife I got, she's not like my real wife. You're my real wife.
Oh.
Karen Truesdell.
Oh.
Which is hilarious.
A double marriage?
Uh-huh.
Nice.
And it's secret, though.
Okay.
Part of being in a real marriage is not telling
anyone. Doing a secret wedding.
Yeah. That's the 50s. You could do shit like that. That's dope.
Like, town to town. Street to street, you could do shit like that.
There were probably so many back in, like, the 30s and 40s.
Oh, yeah.
Had, like,
so
multiple
crazy
families and towns. Like, there's no internet. There's no phones, barely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Do you think he kept his second marriage's ring on his, like, on his toe? He had, like, a toe ring? Like, he had his wife's ring and then second wife?
What we do in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Tuesday's ring shit.
Carolyn's like, why are you we're always wearing socks in the shower? Even?
I have a condition.
He's like, do I have to sock you in the nose? Now, funny thing about the ring. So he had his, I think his grandmother's ring or something, and he gave that one to Truesdell. And she lost it.
The second wife got the grandmother's ring?
Yes. So he knew with the first one going into it that it was not serious.
Yeah.
And Truesdell actually lost that ring on the first day she had it.
Truesdell,
what'd she do?
We don't know. Probably at the beach.
She was trying to juggle it. She was really excited, so she was just throwing it up in the air.
Unlike Oliver Reed, Scott was often drunk before and during performances, but had a magical ability to seem sober while on stage. Drinking had taken over, and this was fine with George C. Scott. One night after a nice show, driving his second wife Truesdell home, clutching a bottle of brown, he cracked under the pressure of his new double life and started yelling, "It's the only way!" while switching into a lane of oncoming traffic. Truesdell recalls the situation as not really knowing how they survived the murder-suicide attempt, but it was enough for her to say, maybe we're not married.
Maybe, and there's no divorce needed because it's a secret marriage.
Yep. So that
Scott, pull over, pull over, pull over. She just takes off her shoe and pulls off the toe ring. Take it back.
I'm glad I lost that bitch's ring.
I'm pretty sure they were both hospitalized after this one. They just parted ways for a while.
Did he drive into another car?
He was trying to.
But he just like ran off the road?
He. There's no part in this book that I read that said he was a good driver. So maybe he was aiming to and just
missed.
Well, you know, I mean, it's what, the 1950s. The only thing illegal about that is nothing. You can drive on the wrong side of the road and drink and drive.
Yeah.
No seatbelts either, right?
They didn't have seatbelts.
Fuck, yeah. They don't. Yeah, yeah.
Damn, what a time.
Yeah, freedom.
It's better to fly out of the car.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Land on some grass, maybe.
Can you imagine, like, some of those prototypes, like, look, it's a regular car, but we've put a mattress on the top, on the hood, which will eject as the person ejects.
My dad was saying, you know, he's like, I mean, my dad wasn't, like, a super car nut, but, like, he's like, those old cars, man, like, you know, you get in a car wreck, and then, like, the person dies immediately, and they're like, who's getting the car?
Yeah, I've heard
you
that.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, because, like, the car is fine.
Just clean out the interior. Everything else is fine.
Aunt Gemma's brains are on the fucking dashboard, but it still runs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Running strong. He quits school and the Steffens Playhouse and sends his real wife and children, or child, to live with her brother in Ohio and tells her he's going to Broadway and he's going to send for her when he has steady income. All right. So
that's broad.
As it turns out, I was lying and Truesdell did not cut off their marriage. I read that wrong.
Okay.
So this was not a big enough of an episode for her to go, I'm not doing that anymore. So she actually
into it.
Truesdell goes with him to Broadway.
Wait, so where are they living before? Was they still in Pontiac?
They are in Columbia, Missouri.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right. He is at school when this is happening. The accident happens. He quits school.
And now he's off to Broadway.
Off to Broadway. And this begins 5 years of disappointment and rejection. Not surprised there.
And his kid, he has a kid now, right?
He's got a kid. Who cares? Who fucking cares? It's 1953. He doesn't care. I don't think this kid was brought up one more time in the book.
The author didn't even give a shit. Yeah. Whatever. Sign him off.
Author did a good job. We'll get into his. I give him some credit later.
Helen actually, his kid Helen actually coded the DNA. It wasn't Crickin. You know, she's a very important woman.
Oh, it was her. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, the first year that they Truesdale and Scott go out there, Scott actually heads right back to for a Thanksgiving with his family in Ohio.
Damn it, I'm American.
Now, while she is gone. Or he is gone. Truesdale finds out that she is pregnante.
Oh, shit.
Oof.
Now.
Got baby mama pregnant or side chick pregnant.
It's funny, too, because before he left to go to New York and Broadway, he does bang up the first wife again. So now he has three kids under the belt.
So he's three for two right now.
Yeah.
I feel like both of those numbers are going to increase as we go.
Yeah. Well, we have two on the dock. I think one of them doesn't matter.
Gotta get that sheepskin condom.
Did you ever go to like a rich kid's party and they had like those sumo suits, right? And you know, they fill them up with air and then you bounce. Do you think that his wives were doing that?
His wives?
Their bellies?
Trying to get the baby out?
Yeah.
I don't know. That would be weird if they did. He seemed to be a very classic 1950s man, i.e. leaving women in the dark about everything.
He should go to Utah.
What's in Utah?
You could have like 10 wives.
But you can't drink.
I think he's less interested in having multiple wives and more interested in just having sex with a lot of women. And one of them just happened to need to get married. So he's like,
"That's true.
Fake marriage. Let's do it.
Let's make it happen."
That's true.
When Scott returned, he resumed his drinking and became more violent. And Truesdale shied away from telling him about being pregnante. One night, Scott was screaming about an imaginary infidelity and advancing on Truesdale with a free weight, of all things. When their friend, whose name was Grimes, comes in and yelled, "Don't hit that girl. She's carrying your child." Drunk as hell, he started advancing towards Grimes instead. Truesdale did the classic grab a frying pan and belt Scott over the head move. And he passed out and they ran away.
Oh, my God. That story is so harrowing, but I'm stuck on the fact that their friend is named Grimes.
Yeah.
That's a cool name.
It's Elon Mustard.
Yeah.
Except, yeah, that chick's name is Grimes, right?
Yeah.
Same chick? Is Grimes actually like a 90-year-old woman?
We can actually assume that.
She could be. Yeah, it could be. Mustard's a time traveler.
She has like the skin of a 90-year-old woman.
Maybe she is.
Yeah.
Do you think he, that day, those people invented the PUBG with the frying pan?
Oh.
That's where that's from, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the neighbor
crazy.
Next door. He's just like, I'm just getting this last computer bit together.
I gotta put this frying pan on my ass to protect me from getting shot.
It's Forrest Gump should have taken that one, you know.
PUBG mobile.
A few days later, Truesdale returns and confirms that she is carrying child to Scott, who immediately says, "Abort, abort."
Facts.
Truesdale refused, and Scott quietly accepted his fate. Just kidding. He tried another murder-suicide by smothering her and letting the apartment fill it up with gas.
Oh, shit.
That's love right there.
This guy is doing insane murder-suicide attempts.
Because he doesn't want anyone else to have her.
Yeah, it's love, like it's you just love. Said. I agree with you. True love.
He knows he's a piece of shit. He knows what's going on. He's just got to get rid of it.
Dude, he's just living his best life, which is the worst life you can live.
The Marines really fucked up by not sending this guy to Okinawa.
Yeah, right?
He's got PTSD.
Jesus Christ.
He has PTSD and he hasn't done shit.
It's funny, too, because there's a lot of the Oliver Reed comparison here, and Reed had a similar thing because he signed up during the Korean conflict and then right after
got discharged.
He just went over there and they were doing like exercises. Yeah. That's it.
Jumping jacks.
Yeah. And like he was just ironing suits the whole time.
I mean, Reed, I mean, he was like, I guess he would get in fights and stuff, but I don't think I remember from the story him being so like suicide-y emo boy.
Reed is funny. George C. Scott, the only reason this is funny is because we're here.
Yeah.
Nothing else it's about it's funny.
Yeah, this is a horribly
we're going from,
violent man.
We're going from the people who ran the concentration camps to a domestic abuser.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, back to the good old days of roast.
But we can make fun of him because he was a very famous actor that had lots of money. So fuck him.
Yeah.
I love him. But also fuck him. You're right. His family realized something was weird. His father demanded he come back to Ohio to be with his wife. Truesdell lived with some friends during this time. Within no time, Scott loses both women. He confessed to Carolyn about the whole Truesdell thing, and she agreed to a divorce. And Truesdell, by the time he gets back to New York, was engaged to some other schmuck.
Oh,
damn, lost out.
Good for her.
Yeah, he's technically, on paper, he's child-free now.
Oh.
Woo.
Keep that in mind. He lost custody rights. None of them.
Sounds
great.
Sounds right.
So we're back to zero.
Yeah.
So all right. Fucked. All
right. So we went from just 3-2 to 0-0.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, he's broke at this point. No school, no job. Family doesn't like it. Nothing. No prospects. So he moves back in with dad to his new house in Pontiac, Michigan.
And this is where the first sitcom occurred. My suicidal drunk son and dad.
Classic.
So how, he's like, how old is he here? Like in his early 30s?
No, this is your age.
20s, mid-20s?
Yeah. He is bopping. He acted in the local Will Away Theater, which is probably like equivalent to the Purple Cow around here. It's not real theater. It's very amateurish. He found himself in jail a few times for breaking the alimony orders. As you do.
Mm-hmm.
Whose fault is that? Probably the judge's.
Probably.
Bill Merrill, the Willoway Theater owner, was asked to send some of his best performances for a Hollywood screening for Warner Brothers. So, of course, he picked Scott. He's probably the only guy worth it. He was put up in a motel 8 miles away from Sunset Boulevard, where he would walk every morning to meet agents. No bites there.
When did he end up in California?
He was with his dad for like 6 months to a year.
Hmm. Oh, okay. And that was in Michigan. And then he's like, fuck it, I'm going to California.
Well, and he was like endorsed to go out there because he was doing the screen test thing with Warner Brothers. And like the way movie contracts worked back then, they were very different. They'll keep you on the hook. It's not, you don't go for a part, you go for a contract for Warner Brothers. We've talked about that.
Right.
Like,
Or it's like you're going to do 3 movies or like 2 movies or whatever it is. Yeah.
Exactly. They do like big deal signing stuff. Actually, I think we were talking about like Brando was the guy who kind of broke that.
Marlon Brando broke. Well, he was signed on to a whole bunch of contracts, and he was like, fuck them.
He's smart. That's why.
Yeah.
Brando, we're going to get into part two, because they, of course, the meeting of the minds.
mm-hmm.
He becomes a short order cook, though, in the meantime.
How'd he cook them eggs? Fried and fertilized?
Oh, yeah, dude. Dude, he took notes from the best. as you could guess, Scott was not an L.A. guy. He didn't like the liberalisms. Like,
doesn't seem like his town.
No. He was pretty traditional man in a lot of ways. And then
he likes Pontiacs.
Loves Pontiac. Love a good Firebird.
A little Michigan Pontiac.
That's right. That's right, Mike.
Sorry. It's upstate. You know, up north.
So he is fed up with the industry type, these mentally ill people that run Hollywood. And George does his own, I'm going to be a hobo for a couple of years. And does the Jack Kerouac dream that so many people wish they could have done.
That's why sick back then. You probably like wouldn't get, I mean, you probably could get murdered, but.
No one's going to murder George.
He's a big guy.
Yeah. He might murder someone.
He's the guy you don't pick up.
Maybe he did during this hobo time.
Dude, and we've also talked about just like how crazy, like, you know, how crazy it was to just live back then, right? Like, you get an apartment off, like, working at, like, a gas station or whatever. So if you're homeless, you know what I mean? Like, you're never going to be able to eat. All you have to do is, like, you know, do a little job here or there, like, cut someone's lawn, and you've got, like, dinner for the week.
Yeah, there was always work to do.
Damn.
Yeah.
After tumbling around for a while, he's like, all right, this isn't for me either. I need a shave. He gets his life together. He calls his sister Helen, and she takes him in her place in D.C. Now, after her brother-in-law After his brother-in-law gets him a job pouring cement, he sees a flyer for a stage production, and the actor in him couldn't resist. He also meets his next wife, Patty Reed, at the next play. Of course, this is a great place to pick up chicks.
So is he doing theater because he likes theater or because he can meet women there?
Oh, he's doing it for the theater.
Okay.
He is very...
very dedicated.
Yeah. It's theater, alcohol, and then pretty much nothing else. That's the important hierarchy scale.
Of all right.
Yeah. They meet in this production, this local place in D.C., and it goes fine, and they go, you know what? Let's try that Broadway thing again. Let's go to Broadway and see what happens.
Let's be cats.
Wow. Yeah, think about that.
Let's do cats.
Or Wicked.
Let's do
them
cats.
Them before Wicked.
Just imagine George C. Scott on a broomstick. Like getting all mad at the stagehand trying to fly him around.
What does this music start? Kuna Matega. What does that mean? The Lion King.
I wish I could do a real good George C. Scott impression. I think it's impossible.
Do you sound like a pack of cigarettes? Like, aren't you like smoking?
Yeah. Oh. He smoked a lot of cigarettes.
Ugh.
A big old chest on him, too. He'd be able to squeeze out. While looking for acting gigs in New York, Scott worked overnight at a bank. He'd get in at midnight and leave at 10 a.m. And by noon, he was hammered and ready to fight people.
Hell yeah.
His frustrations. One friend noted that during this period, he punched so many walls and mirrors that it surprised he could still able to close his fist.
Oh my gosh. Jeez.
Scott did find some steady work in the Sunny Parlor Playhouse in Ontario, so he shipped up there, and he was immediately a dark presence amongst these fruitcakes.
Mike, you go OGs when he's like, people could barely open his fist, and then you've been banging your knees in the concrete for fucking 15 years. but now you're walking around with a cane.
But punching holes in the wall is like...
it's only spoiled kids do that, like, and so George C. Scott.
That's such like that's such a outburst, I feel like. It's when you see someone punch a hole in the wall.
Was he doing it because he was like be alone in a room and get angry, and he's like, there's no face to punch here, so I got to punch the wall?
I guess so. I mean, it came in a lot of reasons. He can get mad at anything, and he would just go to punching. He had a lot of energy. I had to get it out.
Well, do we know if he was actually punching walls or if he was just trying to role play as Mike with his tech decks?
That's a good point. I got to write him.
That's like me when I was 13, like kicking holes in my sheetrock.
Well, yeah, because you were mad.
Yeah.
You probably lost my video game.
Yeah, I lost my Xbox. My parents took the cord, and I fucking kicked a hole in my wall one time.
Nice.
Oh, did you deserve it?
Yeah, probably. I wasn't doing homework. I was playing Call of Duty all fucking day.
Fuck your parents.
Fuck you. I'm trying to bury Sergeant Billy here.
See, that was, oh man, my dad was so pissed when I did that.
Well, you know, you should have punched him. Fight your dad.
We used to fight way back in the day.
Now you know you could beat him. It's unfair.
Well, now you're borrowing his cane.
Yeah, he's got a handicap. He's got like quadruple heart surgery. So that was like his like... but he can't hit me because I'm sick. I have my heart. Sometimes I didn't give a shit.
I like how that's why. This is not, I respect your father. No, you can't hit me because I'm sick.
Yeah, that's funny. Good times.
Fun stuff. One afternoon up in this Sunny Parlor Playhouse we were just talking about, early on in his residency, he got into an argument with his wife, Patty Reed, on the front porch of the playhouse in front of several of the cast members. Now, the fight concluded with him throwing Patty off the front porch, just picking her up and tossing her in a bush.
All right.
And these are all Canadian theater people, so imagine their reaction.
Hey. I'd be like, holy shit, this sucks.
Well, I'm Canadian, so that wasn't too polite, was it? Yeah.
This guy's built like a moose, eh? Oh, my God.
Oh, what are you doing?
After the small run at Sunny Parlor, it was back to low-wage work and hard times for Scott and Patty. Patty gives birth to her son, Matthew, late 1957s. Things get harder, as you'd assume. Back in New York at his bank job, he catches wind of an off-Broadway production of Richard III, and they're holding auditions. Scott claims this to be his do-or-die role. He's like, I'm getting this one or I'm done. There you go. He gets it. Richard III is kind of like one of these characters in theater that is coveted.
Is he Richard III?
Yes, he is.
Nice.
Yeah, and he got rejected several times, and just based off of the other auditions and then having to re-audition and one of the producers liking him a lot, he gets the part.
Wow. And he punches all the other producers so they don't have a vote.
He just murdered them.
He looks makes like sense as a Richard III.
Yeah. He,
quick temper.
Ruled.
Conniving. Yeah.
And he was a hit. This is George C. Scott is actually making waves in the acting community now. It's off-Broadway production, but off-Broadway is starting to grow because people are kind of tired of the yesteryear Broadway shit. This is during Joe Papp's Shakespeare Festival. His company was big enough to get his name in the papers and the attention of Jane Deasy, which is his talent agent and was his talent agent for the rest of his life. In fact, at one point, he got all jealous that she was dealing with other clients, so he just paid her to be exclusively his agent.
What?
Oh, yeah,
he did good. He did another role at the same company in As You Like It. And Deasy got, he got some work for Scott in TV. Scott did not like TV, but it was a paycheck. And it was much better than theater, these TVs.
Yeah.
It's an
Andy Griffith show?
No, actually, I wouldn't be surprised if he did a guest spot on that. But he probably did.
I was just trying to think of like 50s TV shows or some shit.
He did, none of the early ones are worth mentioning. Because there were so many, like TV was very different back then. There were less series. There were more like
specials. Yeah, it was very few choices. It was like select.
It was few choices. And it was like networks just going, yeah, we're going to just put on like a stage. Like we're going to do a Shakespeare version of this.
Yeah. We're going to do like a 2-hour thing of this for this holiday.
It wasn't like a series.
Oh. Right. It's like back then, you know, in the late 1990s, you had Survivor and Greatest. What was the one where they ran around the world? Now.
Big Dad.
The Amazing Race.
Amazing Race. Now you could go watch Blind Animals Love on Netflix, or you could go watch, you know, Kiss Me Upside Down Backwards on the other videos.
Are any of those real?
I don't know. There's one where they dress up like furries.
Well, that's pretty cool.
What about that show War? Because I used to watch it with my dad. It was like an old 60s or early late 50s TV show about war.
I don't even know that one.
It's like MASH? War X. No, it's called War.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. Don't know it.
Yeah, it was a really old one.
Well, I mean, I hope it did well.
Maybe it was early 50s, maybe then.
It was a black and white?
Yeah, it was black and white. It was dope. Hmm. I recommend it if you like war shit.
I watch it. I've been watching a lot of
old
shit.
It's called War, yeah.
I don't like news. I don't like color anymore.
It was on the Starz network back in the day.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Things to note about this period in George C. Scott's life is we got a lot more money coming in. The drinking got way worse, and the marriage was...
crumbling?
That's a nice, light way of putting it.
I feel like it always follows when all that shit's happening. It never... It
seems like the more money he makes, the more he drinks and beats his wives.
I think it's enabling.
All right.
I think he's going to beat his wife regardless.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's my next book, the Economy of Housewife Beating.
Yeah. Well, that was probably part
of
the...
right?
That was part of like the nuptials, right? Like, so you mean like, will you love to hold and to have to beat the fuck out of every weekend? You may now give your wife a kiss, punch in the kisser.
Yeah, punch in the kiss, a sock in the kisser, right there. Scott met trouble in his next stage role called Children of Darkness. The role was introduced in a third act. His role was introduced. In the third act, and by all accounts, it stole the show. So you have the show goes on. He comes out in the third act as his character. People are like, wow, who's this George C. Scott guy? I forgot the other two acts.
Sounds pretty cool. Children of Darkness.
Oh, it's probably the best. During the end of this run, he meets his next wife.
All right. Number four.
Mm-hmm. She is a well-established actor, and she had a great career. Lovely woman by the name of Colleen Dewhurst. Now, Dewhurst and Scott were professional together for about 4 months on the production. One night after a performance, Dewhurst went to a bar after locking herself out of her apartment, and Scott happened to be sitting there. They talk, seeds are planted. Now, they're both cast to do their first film. It's 1958-ish. Scott was doing The Hanging Tree, starring Gary Cooper. He pulls in about $5,000 on that one. That's 1958 money.
That's good money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sheet.
back when a meatloaf sandwich cost you a dime.
Oh my god, I'd kill for a dime meatloaf sandwich right now. Yeah.
It's like so upsetting. I just said I'm watching all these old movies, and whenever someone orders something, let me get two coffees. All right, that'll be 4 cents.
Fuck you, asshole.
God damn it.
Like, even if you wanted to walk around like you were a medieval, like, rogue and, like, with a sack of coins, you can't even pay for anything anymore.
Yeah, really.
How am I supposed to do that? Yeah, I just had to have I have to have a medieval sack of credit cards. Which one would you like to use? I've got Discover. I've got the extra air miles.
Dewhurst is doing her shoot, some movie. I don't care. Scott's out there. He's doing his thing. And they fell in love.
Oh.
When they returned from filming, they broke it off with both of their spouses. Dewhurst was married herself for 12 years.
Damn.
And they moved in together.
She'd been married for 12 years. She's like, I'm going to divorce this man to marry a guy who's got an untold number of kids from at least three wives.
Yeah.
Does she know that, though?
She can really pick them.
Apparently.
He probably didn't tell her he had kids. You think?
Well, he does it on paper.
Yeah, on paper.
Can't prove it. Trust me, doll.
Like, in that first conversation, she's like, oh, so do you have any kids? He's like, not legally. No.
Some say I do.
I can see him. I think he was like big on changing the topic.
I have no tax dependents, if that's what you're asking.
That's what he fucking punches her right in the face.
Yeah.
Fucking bitch.
So nice to see you again. How are your kids? Boo! He was cast in his first official Broadway play. It's called Comes a Day, playing sort of a...
How many times has he come in a day?
He comes a lot.
He's got to do it at least once a day. Got to get the poison out.
That demon out. Yes, the demon out of your body.
So here's a fun part. He plays a psychopath named Tidings Glenn. The play was panned by critics with the exception of Scott's performance, because guess what? He's a psychopath.
He crushed it.
There's one thing I remember. I didn't write it down here, but we're sharing to illustrate the type of man and physique he had. He had this thing he was able to do. He was able to crack his knuckles without his other hand. So just kind of like hand up and crack his knuckle, probably from punching so much shit.
Ugh, it was just pieces of glass moving around.
And it was loud enough where during a monologue, he did it every night during the play. And people were like, that was hideous.
Ugh.
Like, during this psychopath little speech. Yeah, it was fun.
He looks like the Hulk kind of a little bit.
Dude, so you're telling me like he's just as good as Heath Ledger because like he died for his art and like he was like actually the Joker. And then like, but like he's like so serious for the movie, but then like he took it too serious and died.
Yeah.
Why I'm gonna so say serious? It's just like that.
Okay, cool.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yo, I saw the shirt at the mall and I was like, that was the best actor I've ever seen. He was so serious once.
Why did you do it so seriously?
It was Lindsay Lohan we have to blame.
Were they dating?
I think she might have been the cause.
She killed him? Oh my god.
It was some heard famous celebrity. Heard some dirty secrets.
He's in Cats.
Yeah, he's in Cats.
Yeah.
In the roast mortem lore of George C. Scott's life, he is certainly in Cats.
It's the truth.
His drinking and temper remain the same. While in the dressing room at intermission, he had a few healthy gulps of brown and punched a mirror, slicing his hand up real nice.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Having to go back on the stage in 10 minutes or so, he went to a drugstore and grabbed some rubber gloves to keep the blood off the stage.
Nice.
This breaking of the mirror, the wound required 22 stitches.
Oh my God.
So he's just doing his bit on stage and the glove is just like filling up like a balloon.
Like,
I'm just imagining like you're standing outside the theater during intermission having a smoke with like one of the audience members, and you just see the lead actor running across the street, blood pouring down his arm. You're like, I guess the play's canceled. Go back in, and he's just still going.
That's pretty funny.
He's also the kind of guy who, like, he's the dude who punches the mirror and starts bleeding and then gets mad that he's bleeding. Like, he has compound anger. Like, it didn't come out. It's not a venting process. It's just like, I'm doing this now, and fuck, there's blood everywhere.
You gotta just stop and breathe, George. Come on.
Yeah, right? He just needed to hear that.
Stop and breathe, George.
He would punch you so fast.
George, Vietnam's heating up.
George, the dream's not dead. Yeah, George, download the app Headspace.
Oh, fuck. Is he in Apocalypse Now?
No, that's Brando.
Oh.
But.
Oh, yeah. I'm fraud.
That's fine.
They look kind of similar.
You're injured.
He could have been one of the guys on the boat.
Could have been.
Maybe. Nah, he wasn't.
No, I'm seeing like I could see him playing one of the guys in the boat.
Yeah, he likes,
I thought
he'd
be like the end guy.
Kurtz now.
Kurt, yeah.
Final girl. Let's see. During a cast party of the same production, he took one of the other cast members that he did not agree with about something and dangled him off a rooftop and screamed about him for stepping over his lines.
Ooh.
The cast member, apologizing for his life, was then led up by George C. Scott, who then calmly walked over to where he was seated and ate a steak. And didn't acknowledge anyone.
That was savage.
That is insane.
I kind of want a steak now just hearing that.
My mouth's right? Watering a little bit.
Yeah, right?
It's steak. I'm a little hungry.
That was probably that was a delicious steak.
Yeah, I was looking forward to it. Another cast party, he beat the shit out of a reporter and was thrown in jail, claiming to not remember the event, which is smart. Yeah. I never remember anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With all the chaos that's happening during this role, he's actually nominated for a Tony Award.
Oh, he got a good old Anthony?
Yeah. An Anthony Award. A Tony Anthony Award. It's crazy, though, because he's like, he's still the violent man on Broadway, and he's moving along.
Yeah.
Doing fine.
Moving up in the world.
It is not messing up his career, his strange and violent behavior.
Do you think any of
more
these...
More of a buzz?
I was going to say, do you think any of these men still exist on Broadway? Probably not.
No.
No, dude.
No, because he's like a dumb jock that got into acting, it sounds.
Yeah.
As a white man, I would say there are no white men on Broadway anymore. It takes a white man to be this angry.
That's a fact.
Punch holes in the mirrors and shit.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't speak for all of them, but that's my feeling. It's my gut.
I've been to a Broadway play since COVID. Probably since I was like...
Since COVID?
That was your cut
off. Or even like... I was like fucking 12.
Yeah, that's... Well,
all right, that's different.
COVID. I saw Good Vibrations.
I was going to say, did Mike just come out as like a big show tunes guy? Are you like going to see Annie Get Your Gun every other weekend?
I listen to big
and you're
band
skateboarding?
Music. Maybe you guys don't know my secret life.
I want to know more about that life.
It's meant to sing.
Scott, after all this craziness, was like, you know what? Let me join Alcoholics Anonymous. I think I'm getting a little out of control here. Partly due to his role that he was given for Hitchcock's The Anatomy of Murder. No, wait, it wasn't Hitchcock. Fuck. It was Jimmy Stewart. I'm confused. I confused myself. Jimmy Stewart starring in it, and it's Otto Preminger who is directing it. I don't know why Anatomy of Murder. I'm thinking of a different Hitchcock film.
Tom's fired.
Tom Scratch fired from the record.
Fired.
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 You're fired.
I deserve to be fired.
Tom, Mike, take over the scripts.
Tom, get over here.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Just finish this line. Oh, so Preminger tolerated zero shenanigans from his actors during his shoots. Okay. Last line.
Which one? A few. Where would you leave off?
The very last line.
Enjoyed a steak. To keep his mind off of drinking, he took up bricklaying, but in his apartment, landlord was mad.
I don't write these scripts in full sentences, so it's gonna be really terrible.
He took up bricklaying in his apartment.
No, he just takes up bricklaying in his New York City apartment.
Oh,
to keep his but it's inside.
I like that.
He's not checking with any architects or engineers.
He didn't need that back then. No permits, no codes. Fuck that.
I need something new to punch.
Yeah, right.
This drywall ain't doing it for me anymore.
I don't want a window anymore in my house.
I have a part to do.
Can I keep reading, Tom?
Sure. Why don't you give me a few more?
Well, I'll read one more line.
Sure.
Anatomy of Murder was somewhat of a hit and Scott's role as attorney Claude Dancer was extremely well received.
I think that Yay, gets Mike!
All right. All right. Good research, Mike.
Thanks.
Yeah.
1959, and Anatomy totally wrapped, and he did a few TV appearances, and then another Broadway role that was excellent for his career. It was called the Anderson Trial. Dewhurst and Scott were living together, both separated from their spouses. This was a scandalous living arrangement, and Dewhurst had become pregnante.
Ooh.
Their relationship stayed out of the public eye, which was difficult because Dewhurst was starring in Caligula on Broadway, and Scott was nominated for an Oscar for his role in Anatomy. So people wow. want to know about these people now.
Mm.
I thought you were going to say she was in the film Caligula.
No, we talked about that.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Because we were talking about that one recently.
She was in the play where there was less hardcore pornography.
Yeah, less fucking.
Unless
still some fucking. Just less.
Well, unless you saw on the stage. Off Broadway, which is just in the alley.
Yeah, it's in a strip club.
Yeah.
That is an alley. You're right.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Scott then starred in a Broadway flop called The Wall, followed by a film career boost in The Hustler, starring Paul Newman.
Dude, Pink Floyd, The Wall, bro.
Yeah. Salad he dressing.
He's in that movie?
No, Travis just totally confused everyone.
Come on, Travis. The fuck, dude.
That sort of became an instant classic for a few reasons. No one expected it to do that well. And the reason that The Hustler was pushed through as quickly as it was is because Fox was funding Cleopatra, a four-hour movie that we talked about when we did Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah.
So basically, Fox was in way over their head with Cleopatra. And they had no more money left. So they were like, we need to get a script out. Paul Newman comes along with this Hustler movie. And they're like, we could shoot this in a month and a half and get it out and get some money for Cleopatra. It did amazingly. The Hustler is a great movie.
That's wait.
Even it worked well in the old box office.
That's what's the one with Tom Cruise? I thought The Hustler was with Tom Cruise.
No, it's Paul Newman. I don't know.
But Paul Newman and Tom Cruise.
I don't know. Cocktail?
Risky Business?
Not risky. It's a pool movie where they're shooting pool.
Top Gun.
Nah, it's not Top Gun. I've seen that one. It's a pool shark movie.
The movie Taps actually is George C. Scott and Tom Cruise. But it's irrelevant. Travis, what were you saying over there?
No, never mind.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say was never mind. I just wanted to interrupt everyone.
Yeah, he's the Nirvana album baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh shit.
I'm suing you.
Sell my peepee too much. My peepee's on so many posters in college dorms.
Yeah. Oh my god.
The balls.
So many college chicks have seen my dick.
After a couple more TV appearances, the Scott family, now legally married, they leave New York to go to Malibu. In Malibu, he makes loads of money in TV appearances and wanted to venture into the production side of things. He had a vision of opening theaters across the Midwest and taking the best performing of those plays to Broadway. He started in Michigan so he can get to his hometown. His theater folded after two productions.
Good job.
It was a poorly planned venture, and the venue owner was never on good terms with Scott. I couldn't imagine being on good terms with him if I had to do business.
I mean, he seems like a very reasonable, level-headed guy.
It just starts to holes start to appear in all the walls that he's all the mirrors are breaking.
It's a haunting.
Yeah.
It's a goddamn haunting.
Here's the plot. First, there's a ghost that puts holes in the wall. Second, there's a broad and I knock her up. I mean, the actor knocks her up.
It's so weird. Like, anytime George C. Scott comes to town, there's, like, a Home Depot that comes next to him, you know, because I guess you just follow him and he's doing good. You know, he's breaking stuff. He had put a lot of money into this production, and it was a lot of his own money. And if there's anything you know about production is, don't put your money into it, because it's a failure. It's always expect the worst. This was a whole other debacle with fundraising. He started doing these parties, and eventually he went public. And he was like, look, we've got this theater thing. Let's sell all these shares. And it was going very well, but then that pesky SEC.
Goddamn SEC.
Dude, so bad. Hate those people. They step in, they go, we don't like the way you're selling this.
Hold up.
Yeah, wait, isn't this just a boring version of Chuck E. Cheese?
You mean the SEC?
No, George C. Scott's Broadway dining experience. I want to see a dining experience. Fake...
He's throwing parties for the elites to so they can give raise him money.
All right, so yeah, boring Chuck E. Cheese.
Wow. Sad.
I want to see a robot android rat sing to me. I mean,
that's the future.
Now.
That's what do you think Boston Dynamics is really doing?
Yeah,
they're trying to sling pies.
Remake pies, the animatronic industry.
Pies and Bud Heavy to fucking dads.
That's a good idea. I could use a Bud Heavy right now. So Scott puts up $75K of his own money.
That's a lot back of them.
It's a lot of scratch.
Those big, those big bands.
That's the kind of shit you hear like, oh, $75K in 1960 money. Why don't you just open up a stadium?
Why don't you just fucking retire?
Yeah.
Why the fuck don't you just retire? You have 75 grand in 1960. Yeah. You could probably buy Arizona.
Yeah.
This guy doesn't think. This guy is fucking out of control, this guy.
He's got aspirations, Mike.
He's a fucking ding-dong.
He does. Ding-dong. Here comes another Oscar nomination for The Hustler. But Scott had already been jaded by the Academy. He wrote to them. And asked them to be, if he could be unnominated, which is against their policy. He didn't win. Further disenchanting Scott. Scott hates the award shows. He hates them.
He's with the limelight. He's not about that.
No, he doesn't see it as competition. He's like, what are you doing? Like,
we're all
acting.
Just acting, yeah.
Why are
we rating it?
Yeah, there's good actors and there's bad actors. Like, why do I have to be in competition with these people? And also, he was very in tune with the Academy Awards versus other award shows. You buy yourself into the Academy Awards. It is a very corrupt thing.
Really?
Yeah. I know that. Like, yeah. You send screeners to the voters. So, like, it's all this, like, it's just an industry now.
They send them gift baskets. And yeah. In the gift baskets, they're
demo reel.
It's like, here's the DVD, even though it's 2022, and here's a boatload of other shit that you don't need, but already have probably.
Wow,
the care packages are like to each. I think there's 900 members of the Academy.
Like
they're each like valued at like $8,000-$9,000. That's like the low end.
Yeah. Wow. This box collection of the single movie is filled with 100 little white baggies. Yeah. Woo, this is a great movie.
I have a Panera gift card in here. Yes, but it's worth $5,000.
Dope.
It looks like so little like the styrofoam things, but it's just tiny dime bags of cocaine.
What is Panera this? Keeping Mike Clark
packing
peanuts.
Yeah, packing peanuts.
Fun for freebasing. The theater in Michigan, you know, it had a course, but it flopped, like I said. So back to acting for George C. Scott. He signed a 3-year deal with CBS for a series called East Side, West Side. I'll get into that in a bit. He also once again played Shylock in The Merchant of Venice to the largest audience to date. It was a live televised event.
Wow.
First time for Shakespeare, actually. It's the first Shakespeare live event.
Do you think that was the first time he played a Jew?
No, but I don't know. He may have played a Jew every night, not paying his bar tax.
Hey!
It's fun. It's fun. Sorry, all you Jews. I renounced my Judaism, so I apologize to you.
There you go.
For that joke.
Now no one on the pod can make Jew jokes.
No one's... Then we're not making that joke. I said the last one, and it was
Tom said it, not us.
Forget it. Okay, where the hell
were
we?
We're getting canceled.
Dude.
They're coming for us. I hear them knocking.
As long as they're not Chinese, I don't care.
Sleeper cells. I know they're listening.
He was playing Shylock. That's how we got off the
stage. Well, yeah. I'd like to clean this up a little bit.
All I've seen is that's the first time that he played a Jew.
So he plays Shylock. This is why The Merchant of Venice is a touch-and-go play now.
Did you watch this Merchant of Venice?
No.
Oh, okay.
You can't find it now.
I was going to say, how did his Shylock compare to Al Pacino's Shylock?
Al Pacino did a Shylock?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Al Pacino did a Merchant of Venice. It's great.
Really? All right. I have to watch.
It's just Al Pacino.
I love Al Pacino.
He is just, they put him in costume, but he doesn't change anything about his behavior.
He's still just Scarface the entire time? He's like, does me want to sell me something? Because my name's Shylock. And
say hello to my little pound of flesh.
Yeah, I
honestly know nothing of that play.
I love my little pound of flesh, by the way. It's one of my favorite assets of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good to have. Anyway, he does this thing. It's a lot of these TV appearances are not recorded anywhere. They're not public anyway. They're probably in some archives. But this leads to his discovery by one Stanley Kubrick.
Mm. Oh,
this is the first time that Stanley Kubrick sees the future General Buck Turgeon in his role for Dr. Strangelove. What a guy. What a performance in that one.
We'll someone told me to watch that movie.
I'll watch it again with
you. Dr. Strangelove?
Excellent.
I heard it was good. Someone told me it was good.
So
I gotta watch that one.
So do you think that the CIA tipped off Kubrick to about George C. Scott, or do you think it was vice versa, maybe?
It's a good question.
Because, you know, he was filming the Lunar Landing around that time-ish. Or getting at least the set built.
What year do they claim that it was landed on?
69.
Okay, so yeah. What is Strangelove? Strangelove is 60. It was filmed in 62. It was supposed to come out in 63, but then Kennedy was killed and they pushed it back.
Right, so he was you know, dressing the set. They're in pre-production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still getting it all right.
Yeah.
Part of the reason he gets this role is because Peter Sellers was actually supposed to be five roles in that movie.
He's doing
three,
an orbit?
He's three in the final.
Okay.
But he was supposed to play Buck Turgeon too, George C. Scott's character. And he was also supposed to play Slim Pickens' character, the infamous bomber pilot.
Right.
With the Texas draw. Amazing character. Amazing character actor.
Yeah.
Love Slim Pickens. Let's see. So leaves the Turgeon role open for George C. Scott. He nails it. Kubrick had a good grip on Scott due to his chess playing, actually. Scott thought of himself as a decent chess player, but Kubrick was a straight-up whiz. You know that, Travis?
Yeah, Kubrick was a brain boy. Like, he was a smart guy.
You know, he funded, I think, the first feature he did, The Killing, by just doing chess gambling.
Oh, shit.
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Damn.
Like just playing speed chess in the park.
Yeah, exactly. You see those dudes playing chess down there? You think that they're doing that for free? No, it's competition.
Yeah.
Dollar games.
They would play together during the early days of the filming.
You know, you'd think like, wow, he's like a grand wizard of playing chess or whatever you call him, you know, but he couldn't get the flag, you know, the flags waving. Come on.
Yeah.
You gotta use your brain.
Yeah. Good job overlooking that one. Okay. Yeah. You really rooked that.
Yeah, right? Checkmate.
I don't know.
Hey, king me, dickhead.
I think I have to check my email now. I think we're getting on Joe Rogan pretty soon. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
That Spotify money is gonna roll in.
Yeah, we're gonna get that deal next. They're gonna actually take money from us.
Yeah.
Okay. They already take money from me.
Yeah. Fire emoji.
So, like I said, he's got a good grip on Scott because Scott is a man of conviction and he likes that Kubrick has the patience and the intelligence to play chess well. Loyal, very loyal in the first couple months of filming. But that loyalty soon disappeared because Kubrick, if you know anything about Kubrick, he loved doing loads of takes. Mm-hmm. He loved taking his time and having the actors do the same thing over and over again. Scott was a one or two take guy. Because he was perfect, and he was mad when people weren't perfect around him. So on top of that, Kubrick had Scott do all these exercises. He would direct him, and he'd be like, well, you know what? Let's do a take that I'm not going to use and overact this one. Act crazier than you would have. And Scott's like, as long as it's not in the film, I'll do it. So Scott would do it, and then those were the ones in the film.
There you go. Yeah,
so
no.
He swear,
I mean, when you watch a Kubrick movie, too, I mean, the shots are perfect. People are, you know, staged perfectly. Now, when you watch a movie, like, basically, even when I went to film school for a year, like, you know, what, over a decade ago, they told you just follow the actors around. Let them do what they want to do if you're a cinematographer. There's no...
How dumb is that?
There's no fucking, like... You know, artistry and DP work anymore. Just film around. Oh, you know, just be in front of the green screen. We'll move around in post. They don't even need a walk anymore.
I'm pretty sure they're still doing good DP work.
Well, that's on certain websites.
Yeah, Johnny Sins and Peter North.
Yeah. Great directors.
Peter North, that throwback. That's almost from Scott's time.
Anyway,
Scott. He felt duped by Kubrick, so he swore to never work with him again. He was like, he didn't do the takes I wanted.
He made me look crazy.
Later, Scott went back on his word. He didn't work with Kubrick again, but he was like, yeah, he was actually pretty brilliant, and that's some of the best acting I ever did. So, yeah, sometimes you need a perspective, a chess guy figuring out. Kubrick, how are you at chess?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, just like... Hello.
That's DJ.
I like playing chess.
Yeah,
I like checkers better.
Mm. Yeah, checkers is the man is a real thinking man's game.
It is. Yeah.
Folding backwards.
Yeah. Like cars.
Dude, you gotta start playing backgammon, dude. You wanna make some money? I'll teach you how to play backgammon, my friend.
Backgammon?
Backgammon.
What is that, like fucking churning butter fast? I don't
know. No, that's churning butter fast. No, that's the one that has the big long triangles on it, and it's usually a folded over and a board.
It's like the row of spikes, and you're moving them around. There's like comes in a briefcase.
Oh, that shit that's always at the diner table. No one ever fucking plays.
Yeah. Well, everyone plays that.
Maybe I played a long time ago. I haven't played that in fucking.
You've definitely rolled a blunt on one of those boards.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I've done that, but I was never.
It's a classic blunt rolling spot. Played one.
Wow. That's funny. That's a throwback. Holy shit. It just made me like smell something. Like you really that nostalgic like smell of being somewhere.
Oh, it's like the like kind of moldy leather of the backgammon briefcase. Yeah,
I got like five briefcases over in the corner there.
You're sicko.
Yeah.
Amazing. So many briefcases. Right, back to Scott. When he wraps the film, he was back in the States. Oh, they filmed that in London, by the way. So he was in London for that whole shoot. He comes back to the States and he works on his CBS show. East Side, West Side.
Tom.
The job he took to get out of debt from the Michigan theater situation.
Tom, did you get an idea of, did he like the UK? I always think it's funny when these American boys go to UK. Was he a UK, did he like it? Did he hate it?
He liked it because of the pub life. And he was in London.
Okay.
So like he was, London was still had its like pomp and circumstance. He did use the term English F slur a lot, but it didn't mean that he don't like being there. There were certain roles that like a director came to him and be like, nah, it's too much like an English F slur. I'm not gonna do that.
All right,
he wasn't talking about the cigarettes either. It was the OT at the end.
If he knew how to laugh,
it was a hard OT.
If he knew how to laugh, he would. No, it was the short version. It was a 3-letter version.
Oh, so he's talking about cigarettes.
No, he's talking about gays.
Okay.
He's rude. He
looks like a rude guy.
I think we covered that when he was beating his wife and trying to murder her with oncoming traffic.
I know, but you know, every now it's still like surprising to hear. Oh, he did it.
Wait, Tom, telling me an actor was a bad person? I thought they're all great.
they're you know what? They're just telling us how to live.
Yeah, they tell me what to feel inside.
Yeah.
It's important.
I'm nothing without them.
Dude, have you ever seen Jared Leto when he wore like a grill and he's like, I'm very funny, but I'm also serious?
Are we just going to do different iterations of the Joker?
Yo!
A role that George C. Scott never played?
Yo, did you see Jack Nicholson when he was like, I'm also extremely serious, but I can smile. Look at me, I'm serious.
I did see that one as a kid. VHS.
Dangerous. Dangerous. And what was the other one? Was the old guy?
What was his
you name? Ever see? Yeah. You ever see Luke Skywalker and he's like, I'm so serious, you can't even see me.
Yeah, voice acting.
I was going to say something crazy. I'm not going to say it.
You can if you want. I mean, this is going off the rails. It wouldn't be you. No one would blame you.
Has anyone here seen Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah. That's what you got. That's your first.
No, that's something in that movie.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We've all seen Empire.
Isn't it funny when Darth Vader goes, whoa, 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 when he tries to hit Luke off the thingy? No?
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. Dude, that was George C. Scott. Really, George C. Scott was the voice so actor for that line. Just that line.
Yeah. It's like, I hate you. Or, I forget what happens. And he tries to like swing him off.
No, yeah, it was Frank Oz for all the rest. And then George C. Scott.
I think he hit
Scott
his arm. Hit
that
his
line.
Arm. And then he goes,
actually, that's James Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones.
Voice, whose first film was Dr. Strangelove.
See, I tied them together.
Thank you.
There we go.
Appreciate it.
Back.
Conspiracy.
I research. Think so.
I'm gonna go with Mike. Did your research?
I read everyone's mind today.
I didn't because I got Darth Vader messed up with yogas.
Guys, I have more of this script to do, so let's move.
All
on.
Right.
So check it out. So he's working on the show East Side West Side with CBS, and he enjoys it because he's afforded a lot of artistic freedom. Up front. It's a pretty heavy show. It's kind of like OG Law and Order. And Scott plays a social worker dealing with very heavy topics, especially for the 50s and 60s. Or we're in the 60s now. All of East Side West Side is on YouTube.
Really?
Yeah, go watch an episode. It's right. It's intense. They don't fuck around. The show debuted September of 1963 with a slow start, but eventually was very well received. Partly because of his influence. He was writing on the show, too. And he's a good writer.
I always think that once Ice-T joined the team for Law & Order, the writing got better. I don't think that he writes for the show, but...
For a guy who's known to say motherfucker, and he's on a show where they can't say motherfucker because it's network television, that's kind of funny. Because it's like watching a pimple like walk around the screen. That yeah. It just can't be popped.
Yeah.
So the show, of course, was battling with advertisers. When you have these heavy topics, no one's like, it's about abortion, it's about a baby dying because it was bit by a rat, it's about these intense things, really dark subject matter. And the, you know, back then advertisers are like, Alpo dog food. It's like the best shit. Look how happy you are when you buy it.
Yahoo soda. Just drink it.
Yeah, exactly. So no one wants to like see a baby die and then like, yeah.
And then learn about their
Ben Gay,
that new
good
soda.
For your knees. Are they that back then, right? Ben Gay?
Yeah, I think Ben Gay has been around for a while. I mean, it sounds like they named it back then.
Well, I don't know about Ben Gay, but Salonpas was tested. It was a Japanese company tested on POWs, American POWs.
The most relaxed POW.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I think I think the alpha version of Salonpas like melted your flesh. So
so they're the trial and error section.
It's a deep tissue remedy.
Well, shout out to those GIs because that should work. Just...
Thank you for your service.
Facts.
So we're in a time where everyone's getting offended by everything, you know, even though there's just like blatant racism and misogyny everywhere, which is, you know, it's fun in doses, I'll admit.
Yeah.
But, you know, society is where it's at. It's not ready to deal with things on TV that aren't just pleasant.
Yeah, right.
It's time for Andy Griffith. Yeah, we mentioned before. That was a hit show.
Leave it to Beaver.
Now let's figure that together. Yeah. That's what America craved at the time.
TV land. Mm. But not TV land. It was all normal TV.
Yeah. TV.
Stop. So Scott grew frustrated because he kept getting stifled, right? They kept cutting stuff and it just wasn't working. So he would go to bat for certain scenes and dialogue, and at airtime, the cowards would just cut it out and sometimes go back on the words. Like he'd leave a meeting where it was about a specific thing. They would say, yeah, we'll leave that bit in. And then when it was on air, they just took it out. Which is, you don't do that to George C. Scott.
No, he'll punch you in the nose.
Yeah, he's fucking scary looking.
You got to stand your ground in front of him, or else you're a pink weenie coward. He publicly lambasted CBS and even took out ads all over the country asking people to write into the network about the gritty topics.
Oh, yeah. So he was like, let's confront it. Let's look in those mirrors before we punch him.
Yeah, sure.
Pretty much.
Has your baby ever been Rye Rat? Send letters to George C. Scott. Here's my home address.
He did have a kind of homophobic streak in him, as previously mentioned, but he didn't have any racist bones in his body. So he was, when they were dealing with these gritty topics, he was very much in for like casting more black actors because they're like, we're in a place where I'm dealing with social workers in a ghetto. Like, I need black actors to work with. Like, I want it to be real, you know? And like, I want one of the other social workers to be black, and like pushing for all these things that people hadn't heard of. Yeah. Like, there was no black regular, like TV recurring character.
Yeah.
There were black stars in movies because those were different than advertisements, but TV was way more, way behind what even movies were doing.
Right. Super whitewashed.
Zatch. By mid-season, the show was ranked okay, but James Aubrey, the president of CBS, known as the Smiling Cobra for his cold-blooded, backstabbing nature, demanded the show director, David Susskind, that the show be set... setting be moved from the ghetto to uptown, somewhere where white people would feel more
bring in the
home.
Whites.
Mm.
So Susskind informed Aubrey that if they did that, Scott would walk. Aubrey called Scott into his office for a good old fashioned straightening out.
Right. This was like what happened to the Big Bang Theory. Originally, it was about crack dealers. And there was, right. Yeah, and then they changed it to a bunch of white guys and Indian guy.
Yeah,
and just using buzzwords, bazinger.
Yeah, gazangis.
You don't want to know what the original bazinga was. Okay? Yeah, it was raunchy.
Yeah,
some good shit.
Let me tell you, it involved sex with your socks on.
It was several slurs strung together like some kind of weird German company.
You know, I've never watched that show, Big Bang Theory.
Probably better for it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's just.
Now, Scott, at the time of this meeting being called, he was quitting smoking.
Oh, so he's even more irritable.
Yeah. Mm. And he's eating apples all the time to curb his appetite.
Very acidic, I'll say that.
Oh, yeah, very acidic. So while Aubrey started yammering on about his complaints, Scott listened while peeling an apple with his pocket knife. After Aubrey was finished yelling, Scott stood up with the knife in hand to Aubrey's face. And said, the show is staying right where it is. Goodbye, Mr. Aubrey. We're not meeting again.
Oh,
what a badass.
I like that. Just straight up, just cutting ties.
Damn.
Just being honest, man.
Shooting ropes, cutting ties.
Have you said enough? One of those kind of things.
Yeah.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Tommy, remember when I was trying to be cool and doing that with an apple before the show and I showed you? I did another George C. Scott thing and just cut my hand open.
Yeah, and did a show afterwards.
Yeah,
we're hanging
and
out.
We did a show afterwards.
I was always like, you don't look that comfortable doing
but
this.
But I look
like,
cool.
You don't look that cool. You looked like you were going to cut yourself. I didn't want to be rude to you. I was like, have you done this ever before? You just got that knife.
Have you peeled before?
No.
Sure.
So the show, of course, because Aubrey was the big guy, he shifts it to uptown. With some compromises, but the grit was gone, and after 5 episodes in the new location, the show was canceled. Scott was not a fan of TV for many reasons. The show was pulled because of the very same features that Scott and Susskind set out to achieve, so makes sense. The depression, the grit, the realism, all the shit they injected was totally taken out of it, and Scott's view of television had changed forever. A quote that I like a lot of that he said in some interview is, it's the most powerful communication device since the history of language, and it's full of shit.
That's so accurate.
He would have loved the internet.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Right? Punching screens.
He probably would have gone to Hawaii.
All these mirrors.
Yeah, he would have gone to Hawaii.
Folks and keyboards.
Gone to Hawaii and threatened Zuck with like a machete. Yeah.
I don't want to sign up for your face. I want to see someone else's face. Scott and Dewhurst, they purchase a farm in Westchester County. Scott purchases a lot of the surrounding acreage, and they build all kinds of guest houses and whatnot. The main house was always a work in progress and filled with chaos. Dewhurst had many of her friends over as guests, and they all stayed for months at a clip because they had these weird like guest house they were constantly building. It seemed like a cool little compound they had going on. Scott, who was the one who initiated to buy the farm, he loved it at first, but he hated all the guests to come by, and his alcoholism was
increasing.
Well, here's the thing. Like, when they first bought the farm, he wasn't drinking as much. He kind of cooled it down, but the guests made him want to drink, which I understand.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
Yeah.
Want some quiet.
Yeah. Free from his CBS commitments, Scott did two very forgettable films in Italy. The first one called The Yellow Rolls Royce, which had zero bearing on his life. It was an in-and-out job. The next film was The Bible, which was a giant flop. But it turned out that we were going right into a very dark time for Mr. George C. Scott.
Mm.
Starts all with this production. He arrived in Rome, August 1964, meeting director John Huston in his suite to discuss the film and meet the Sarah to the Abraham he was playing. Who comes in? Ava Gardner. And we've covered her kind of before. Frank Sinatra episode.
Yeah, I feel like she's popped up in another one too.
Yeah, there's
will she pop up in the Liz Taylor one?
Perhaps.
I think so.
She was like the babe for a long time.
Yeah.
And shit. Yeah, there was someone else we covered who had a relationship with her. Doesn't matter. So Ava Gardner is the Hollywood hot piece of ass who left the broken hearts of Frank Sinatra, Howard Hughes, Mickey Rooney, all on her dunk ass wake, if you know what I mean. She was the Andre the Giant of sex at the time.
Oh,
sounds hot.
Very hot.
Good for her.
Beautiful woman. So Scott and Gardner, they hit it off right away. And they arranged to meet, you know, for role discussion. We have to talk over our roles, obviously.
Professional.
Now, in Hollywood, word travels very fast. Now, Frank Sinatra, he finds out that there's another young buck.
Pissed.
He gets jealous, very jealous of Scott, as he is somewhat threatened by his presence. You know, he's an actual tough guy.
Well, one thing we learned about with the Rat Pack, right? That was just a bunch of guys showing each other their dicks.
Yeah. No exaggeration.
Yeah.
That's what the Rat Pack did. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Just showing them off.
Yeah. They were just, showing they were in hotels in Las Vegas and smoking cigarettes and ashing and boomerang ashtrays, which is the coolest shit in the world, and showing each other penises.
And see, he didn't know what George C. Scott's penis looked like, so he's intimidated.
He needed a look.
Theory has it that, like, we covered Frank Sinatra, and Sinatra always needed hired muscle to do his dirty work.
Mm-hmm.
He was a worm. You know, he's a worm in a suit.
Skinny guy.
But George C. Scott, he was the first tough guy that Ava Gardner was dealing with.
Yeah.
All the other people I mentioned, Howard Hughes, weird billionaire, that's it.
Yeah.
Mickey Rooney, hilarious Asian depiction in Breakfast at Tiffany's. That's it. And Scott was also younger. It didn't matter. Gardner was never actually in love with Scott. She liked him, his company, but Scott was crazy over her. And Dewhurst was in Rome for a while, but, you know, as things were happening, she was like, I'm just going to get out of here.
Yeah.
This is going to go bad. I've seen this. So Scott, faced with the rejection of Gardner keeping him at arm's distance all the time, starts upping the alcohol, as you do. Ooh. When in Rome, literally.
Yeah.
The vino, probably.
Mm-hmm. And Gardner held her drink pretty well. She was a big drinker. She'd go at it, and Scott would come out and drink with her, and she would be fine, and he would be insane.
The thing I always say is, if you're going to go on the vino, make sure you go for Pinot Grigio, not Merlot. Because when you drink Merlot, you only get Merlin drunk. You're going to start throwing spells around. If you drink Pinot Grigio, you're just going to be a funny little elephant and have a good time.
Yeah.
Elephants love peanuts.
I've had a few white women throw spells at me.
After they have too many Merlins.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard that shit too.
Yeah. One of them shrunk my penis. That's why I tell other women.
Yeah.
That's what Frank Sinatra was saying in that hotel suite.
Yeah.
So guys, I swear.
It's low expectation. And pity all in one sentence.
Yeah. Well, gotta know your wines, like Neil deGrasse Tyson, big wine guy.
if you look at this grape, it's not actually touching the other grape.
They did surgery on a grape? Holy fuck.
What is it? Eventually, Scott performed the ultimate love gesture by punching Gardner in the face. Cohar's...
Woman like that.
That actually was a quote. That was I wrote that, actually. Co-star Peter O'Toole needed to be held back from fighting Scott on Gardner's behalf. Scott was then followed around by a set of three mystery men at all times. Nobody knows who hired them officially, but they came to Ava's aid a few times when Scott was getting a little too aggressive. And some weird shit went down. Someone broke into his hotel room and cut all the sleeves off his suit jacket.
Do you think it was Frank?
What's up?
You think it was Frank?
I think it was his guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think his guys were just like,
I want you to sneak in there, cut his suit jacket. Yeah. Make his arms look real tiny.
Oh, shit. This is before Italians realized that no sleeves make your arms look bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, before the situation showed up on the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? God, he looks so handsome. I shouldn't have done that. I should have.
That's a good look.
I should have made his sleeves longer. Just had my tailors.
The sweat's glistening. Oh, his big biceps. I just want to grab him.
Look at that guy. Look at that alcoholic guy.
I want to know how big his dick is.
I want to know how big he is. Get the ruler out. Tony, come on.
You can't get in the rat club without me seeing his dick.
How you doing?
It's called the Rat Pack. It's the rat club before you're in. Yeah. Either way, so he loses all of his sleeves. It's great. Hilarious. I think it's pretty sick.
That's pretty dope.
Someone also poisoned his dog.
That's not cool.
Not cool.
The dog was fine. I mean, it's dead now, but it was fine.
It's dead now?
As of now, it's dead. But it recovered. It didn't die. It just got
accidentally gave it some chocolate milk or something.
Chocolate.
Yeah, it could have just been that. I mean, like, George C. Scott's drunk all the time. He'd be like, hey, dog, you want to try this?
Yeah, he might have poisoned it.
Thank you.
I just got back from the movie with all this popcorn. You want to eat all this popcorn with me?
Here, Sparky, open up.
So shooting wrapped for the Bible, and Ava, for some reason, asked Scott to stay in Spain with her for a while. Smart. Smart woman.
Yeah.
You just punched me so good.
So he followed her back to, let's see. Oh, no, he goes, they're in Spain for a while, then they go to New York. They're having a relationship. Gardner breaks it off in New York, but Scott wasn't done yet. Right, he's stalking Gardner, and it becomes a full-time job. He chases her back over the Atlantic, chases her to London, and apologizes for his behavior. He stalks her in this room. He's like, oh, hey, you're here too?
I'm sorry for freaking you out.
It's a good way of delivering that news. You know?
How's your nose, doll? I'm apologize.
How long have you been in this elevator, Mr. Scott?
Not too many hours. That's a lot. That's an extreme length.
Yeah, he flies to London to just like, and just pick up a phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
She has, like, she'll take the call.
It's probably better than showing up, to be honest.
So he goes there and he's like, hey, look, I've heard it.
We've all been there. We've all stalked a girl before.
Yeah, of course. It's part of being a guy.
Yeah.
How could you not?
Yeah. You got at least once in your life you stalked a girl.
That's the next history based. Roast Mortem merch. The stalking kit.
Stalking.
Here's your map and your
binoculars.
Your location forms.
Here's a baseball hat with no logo on the front.
Here's some fucking tissues for when you find out she's with another guy, you just cry alone in the bushes.
Here's your wank towel for when you're extra sad. Yeah. That's what we're coming out with. So it doesn't go that far, luckily, for Scott. Ava meets him in London, and he's like, hey, let's go out to...
It's fish and chips.
Yeah, fish and chips. A play and a dinner. Who cares? Ava felt the tension, and halfway through the dinner, went back to her hotel.
Oof, that's rough.
Now, according to the biography of Ava Gardner, she ran up to her room and hid in the bathroom. A hammered and violent Scott followed her and banged on the door furiously. Gardner sent her maid, Renee Jordan, to go see him off. But when she opened the door, Scott forced his way in, and holding a broken bottle to Jordan's neck, holding her hostage as he searched the suite for Ava.
Oh.
Somehow, Ava and Jordan got away, and Scott was arrested.
Ava, I'm sorry I freaked you out. Now just come out here.
I'm trying to be calm.
This was like a 45-minute ordeal, and Ava was like locked in the bathroom somehow, and then was able to get to the other room through, I don't know. There's a few accounts of this, actually.
Maybe he got
we don't know if
forgot.
Hers is accurate, but we know he was arrested and he definitely held a woman hostage.
Yeah, yeah, that's sick.
The big bullet points are clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not enough for George C. Scott. He accepted a stage role in London, most likely motivated by the fact that he would be closer to Gardner's Spain home. And he would try to convince her to come to the opening night of this play that he didn't care about. The play was Chekhov's The Three Sisters, and the play was an absolute disaster due to an endless amount of issues. Limited rehearsal time, the director being terrible, one of the Strasbourg. You guys ever heard of the Strasbourg acting technique? It's like method.
Oh, yeah,
method
yeah.
Acting. Strasbourg. This guy who invented that shit.
He was a real, so he was a real quack.
Yeah, and he's directing this. Okay. And Scott is like, why do you have to pretend to act? Just do acting. He's that guy. And also, pretty funny, they were rehearsing in another location, and then on opening night, they went to the theater to do their dress rehearsal. No one took account for this. The place they were doing the play, the stage was tilted. So all the props had to be sawed off. Everything had to be fixed, and the actors like fell opening night. Things just kept happening. It was terrible. Yeah,
you know, I mean, that's kind of like when Bono launched Spider-Man on Broadway. And the actors were violently thrown into the wall.
Part of me wishes that was Andrew Garfield's first Spider-Man. Okay, we're wrapping this episode up. We're running kind of late, guys. Sorry about this.
Sorry, I'm snagged.
Oh, you're snagged. What do you need?
Closer to me. Feet stink. Sorry, Ron. I smell like ass.
Terrible.
Yeah, how dare you, Mike?
So the worst part about the play for Scott, anyway, is that Ava did not show up for opening night. Terrible. Just a bunch of booing Brits, okay?
Oi.
After the performance, Scott got hammered and destroyed his hotel room. Not forgetting the bathroom mirror cut his hand again.
Ooh.
He's like Henry Rollins in that Black Flag album cover.
Dude, he's like, Henry Rollins is like a librarian who is pretending to be this. Have you ever listened to Henry Rollins talk?
He's very,
I don't know who Henry Rollins is.
Oh, you don't know who Henry Rollins is?
You would not think he talks like that, but listen to his music.
He's really smart.
Yeah, he's really well-spoken. Yeah. And
I love listening to him talk.
He's just an excited guy, and he's just happy to be there, but like, he used to be in Black Flag.
My war!
You've heard the name Black Flag. Old punk rock.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he looked like a neo-Nazi.
Oh,
yeah, he would just fuck shit up all the time. And now he's just like,
now he's
writing
books. He does TED Talks about how his life and how you can get your life together and how weightlifting changes life.
I would love to hang out with Henry Rollins.
Me too. I'd love to fucking him. But he hates people, I feel like.
Yeah, he's alone.
Yeah, he's like, I just don't want to do it.
Anyway, George disappeared for 2 nights. So his understudy went on. Scott did the rest of the run, and his understudy kind of stepped in as like a babysitter for Scott. And I guess he was really over the edge. Always in a pub, having to do that. The show ended in a wreck. Didn't even go that long. The female lead, Kim Stanley, had a nervous breakdown, and actually Strasbourg never directed again.
Wow. George Scott broke him.
Oh, yeah. London broke him.
Yeah.
As a weird divergence from show business, he decided to start writing again. In a journalistic fashion, though. It was the height of the Vietnam War, so Scott flew to Saigon to write a long-form article called Sorry About That, published in Esquire 1965. It's a pretty pro-war piece that fully acknowledged the complicit nature of war versus other pro-war editorials.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of like, I'm pro-war, but this is how terrible it is.
Right. Yeah.
Later on, he kind of denounced the piece. He was pro-war during the beginning and middle, and then at the end, he was like, this is dumb. So, we live and learn, whatever. A year after the publication, he denounced the main point, like I said. In August of 1965, Scott went to film How to Steal a Million with a no longer angry Peter O'Toole, Audrey Hepburn, and Hugh Griffith. This was great for Scott because this is what they called a French schedule, which is what you'd imagine versus a Hollywood schedule.
2 day work.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, pretty much. We'll get it. Like actors get 5 hours and then they're off.
We will get it done sometime. Who cares?
Yeah. On Scott's first day of shooting, he was a no-show, even though he was in Paris for a month already.
and he only had to show up for 5 hours.
Yeah. He was too hungover to work.
I like that.
He showed up at the studio later, and the director asked him to stay so they could talk. So Scott left. He was immediately fired from the film. Scott flew back to New York City, and one night while drinking with a buddy and pining over Ava, he decided to call her. He somehow knew exactly where she was in L.A. She picked up, and he hung up furiously. The next day, he picked up 2 bottles of vodka and a brand new Lincoln Continental and drove to Beverly Hills from New York City.
Okay.
Ava, I'm not freaking you out. I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry for freaking you out.
I just wanted to show you my new car.
It's a Lincoln.
I'm so sorry for scaring you.
I'm sorry for hitting you.
He got into to her bungalow, where she was obviously hadn't moved. Because that's how people were in the 50s. It was like, oh, yeah, where are you staying? Ah, I'm just here.
She's getting railed out by some other dude, and he just pulls up, and he's like, I love you still.
We can only assume so.
Yeah. So I'm thinking it's happening. She's getting railed out by some other dude.
So he gets to the bungalow in the morning, and he comes crashing through the front door, breaking it off the hinges, bottle in hand. From there, he proceeds to beat the shit out of her.
Oh.
He, between smacks... She manages to calm him down and fakes promising him that they'll be together. Then she's convinced to let a doctor friend come and give him a sedative. Somehow he's drunk enough to, like, after beating the shit out of her, listening to her just long enough and buying the bullshit, he lets the doctor give him a sedative. The doctor came and injected Scott with something that was supposed to put him out.
Oh, no.
And immediately after
whoopsie daisy.
Wait, so he drove all...
Hold on.
He drove all the way across the country to beat up a woman.
Yeah, 3,000 miles to beat up Ava Gardner, hammered. And after he beats her up, takes the promise that they'll be together as face value. She calls the doctor, says, he's just going to give you something to relax. Now, she is like, give him something to knock him out for 3 days. Whatever he injects this beast of a man with, he stands up right after the injection, walks out the door, and drives home.
Oh, my God!
He never sees or contacts Ava Gardner again.
Just had to get that one punch in again.
Oh, yes. Wait, and by drives home, you mean he drove back across America?
Well, he probably napped the next town over, but the fact that this thing was supposed to put him out after being that fucked. Yeah.
We have to find what the doctor gave him.
Shit.
Just sugar. Yeah. Just liquid sugar.
Sugar.
I didn't write it down. I don't know if it had that. Because like back then, Hollywood doctors, they just had a whole arsenal of shit. Yeah. You know?
Here's some Advil.
But better. I thought that would be a great place to end part one.
Wow. He's quite the character.
Yeah. It's a two-parter, so you have to come back. Then.
Let's really get into this. I like when he beats the shit out of his wife.
You thought he was gonna get the injection and die.
Yeah, I thought he was gonna like crash his car or something crazy.
Whoopsie daisy, the doctor injected pure heroin.
Yep, we
good shit. Oh, wrong bag.
You know, Mike, we got another. He is exactly at the halfway point in his life about now. He is 38, and he makes it up there.
Wow.
It really does.
Damn.
All right.
Well, thanks, Tom.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom.
Can't wait to finish the story.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wild boy.
I'm going to go beat my wife now. I'm inspired.
I'm so happy you've been dumped.
Mike.
You know what? I've been beaten by a woman. I'll say that. I never hit a girl.
You told me about that.
Yeah, I've been beaten by a woman.
He's a small spoon.
You just got to take it.
But you didn't report that, right? Because you're a man. So fucking dear.
Yeah. Most of best domestic abusers don't report it.
It's like tiny girls beating the shit out of me and be like, oh, yeah, she hit me.
Yeah. Well, as soon as you do something to grab her, it's like...
Yeah. Oh, anyway. That's, yeah.
Let's four white men cut discuss that, the Zwick. Nuance. I hear that.
Domestic
abuse.
Yeah, I think that's good.
So cut that.
And with that, I think you should go follow us on Patreon. We got a new system going on. You could leave us a 5-star review or a 1-star review. Those are fun on whatever you listen to.
Oh, right. Yeah, I think Spotify now does. Rating.
Yeah, you can't write anything, but you just hit that 5 stars.
Yeah. Or 4 stars.
Yeah.
Or one.
Or one.
But we're 2 or 3 is an insult.
Yeah. No. Either hate us or give us.
Yeah.
A
don't
good
give
rating.
Me this bullshit. Yeah. Like in between.
Every
yeah.
5 stars.
No milk toast.
Every
shit.
5 stars, a Rogan gets his wings. So come on.
If you give us 3 stars, I'm beating the shit out of you.
Mike will get 2 handles and drive cross country.
Yes,
to
I'll
beat you
find you and beat the shit out of you.
Mike, I've been looking at the Roast Mortem expense sheet. I noticed you've been billing a lot of Lincoln Continentals.
Well. I was going to tell you guys that later.
Well, if it's
for
love,
it's a fucking
Lincoln.
Wait, Mike, so you drove all the way down to Alabama, and then you got said you got beat up by a woman, and you come back, and your knee
and I came
is,
back.
Yes, okay,
my knee's
so
all fucked up.
She put you in, like, literally some wrestling move and just snapped your leg.
She put me in the crippler.
Okay.
Whatever was Chris Benoit's technique. The family style,
family.
It's called, or something.
Yeah. Happy family.
All right, let's wrap this show before we get into Ben Watson.
All right,
yeah.
Thanks very much for your patience, everyone.
Donald Shane.
GoFundMe.com.
/ Mike Regan 69420.
Yes. If you want to contribute something to my funds, there will not be a link. I'll suffer alone.
All right. Thank you, Shane.
All right, thank you, Shane.
I probably wouldn't spend it right.